going into week three of the NFL season, there is some quarterback uncertainty, some big question marks. You're going to have different starters in due to injuries of certain quarterbacks. The main one, and this is just happened super recently, Justin Fields, who was drafted by Chicago. They traded up to get him at number 11, quarterback of the future, no doubt, for Chicago. He's going to be in there because Andy Dalton is dealing with injuries. And it's kind of mixed. I don't know if this means he's officially the quarterback one for Chicago for the remainder of the season. Like right now, week three, they're just going to put him in and go like that, because there was a tweet from, I think it was Adam Schefter, in regards to Matt Nagy, their head coach. And he was saying, let's see if I can find it real quick. He was saying, we're ready to attack this thing moving forward. So I don't know exactly what that means. That to me would indicate Fields is just going to be the guy. And I don't know how serious that Andy Dalton injury is at this point, but he's definitely not playing this week, that's for sure. And yeah, Nick Foles is going to be the number two. He's going to be the backup quarterback for Chicago. And they're playing a Cleveland Browns team, which, you know, it's going to be a difficult first opponent just because of what Cleveland can do on offense for sure. And their defense, you know, I guess isn't anything spectacular, but it's still going to be a little difficult for Fields, I would think. Probably going to be a high scoring game where both teams are in the high 20s, maybe breaking into the 30s there. I could see that being the case. But Fields, when he stepped in for Andy Dalton in week two against the Cincinnati Bengals, definitely struggled a little bit, that's for sure. If I can pull up the stat line here real quick. Let's see. Against Cincinnati, when he came in, 6 for 13, 60 yards and an interception. So obviously, in order to win that game against Cleveland, going to have to be a little bit better than that. And thankfully, he has the skill and he has the ability to use his legs, because, you know, if you have a performance like David Montgomery did and I guess Damian Williams, where they're only averaging 3 yards a carry, you're going to need some help with the legs of Justin Fields there to be able to create some plays, especially against Cleveland, when the backs are probably going to be up against a wall and they're going to have to match what Cleveland's doing offensively. So there's that for Chicago. Justin Fields is in. And then you have Indianapolis, where Carson Wentz somehow sprained both of his ankles against the Rams on Sunday. And I guess Aaron Donald will do that to you sometimes. And Wentz, from what I've heard and then some small clips from that game that I saw, it kind of slightly uncharacteristic play. Like, people just had no clue what he was doing. But he has shown signs of his old self, what he was like second or third in the MVP voting back in the season where Nick Foles took the team and won the Super Bowl. So he's starting to show that form, but I would say he's probably going to be out if you have two sprained ankles. You know, I would say at least maybe a week, and they are set to play the Tennessee Titans at Tennessee. And just today, Carson Wentz not practicing on Wednesday. So then you have to roll with Jacob Eason, who was kind of a, I don't want to necessarily say late round flyer that the Colts were going to have, but just like a good young talent as a backup option. He's definitely not going to be the future for the team by any means. I don't think he is. So, and then when you're playing a team like Tennessee, who just had a super impressive win versus the Seahawks in Seattle, yeah, that's a cause for concern. And yeah, when Jacob Eason came in for Carson Wentz at towards the end of that game, 2 for 5, 25 yards and an interception. So not ideal. Not giving Colts fans a lot of confidence by any means. So that may be difficult, especially if Wentz is out. And it's going to be difficult if Wentz is in, because, I mean, he's not going to be 100% comfortable playing on recovering from two sprained ankles trying to play an NFL game. And next team, the Dolphins, and this is official that Tua Tagovailoa is going to be out because he has fractured ribs. So that means Jacoby Brissett is going to be likely in the football game. And why am I drawing a blank on the Dolphins backup? Well, I guess it would be technically third string. Reed Sinnett. There we go. Reed Sinnett had one hell of a game. I believe it was the final preseason game against the Cincinnati Bengals where he passed for like 343 yards, had a couple touchdowns. I think he was responsible for the Hail Mary pass that won that game. So one of the, I guess, stars, especially towards the end of the preseason, but he won't be in there unless Brissett gets injured. Brissett, you know, came in fairly early against the Bills and was not a fun adventure for Jacoby Brissett. 24 for 40, 169 yards and an interception. And, you know, granted that Bills defense is super tough. You have a struggling offensive line in Miami to where they can't really get much going on the ground, or, you know, they maybe they take away momentum from one of their running backs because they're such a committee with Gaskin, Malcolm Brown, Savannah Med, and then whatever, you know, the carries Jacoby Brissett may steal if he's trying to, yeah, just evade pressure or avoid pressure and all that. So another situation kind of like I guess Indianapolis, to where you're playing the 2-0 Las Vegas Raiders, who have earned impressive wins over both the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers to start this season. Yeah, that's going to be an uphill battle for sure, in Vegas as well. So that crowd is going to be very energized. I think that's an indoor facility. I believe you can open the roof in that Allegiant Stadium, but it's supposed to be like 97 degrees, which is, I mean, obviously something Miami is used to playing in, but that's something that I saw that I was kind of surprised by. All right. And then you have, actually, for the game tomorrow, Panthers and Texans, Tyrod Taylor, who was the starter now for Houston because Houston is trying to look for a trade partner for Deshaun Watson. Obviously, you're not going to try to throw out Deshaun Watson and make him play any games in case he gets hurt, and then the trade value or any value for Deshaun Watson, especially given his current situation, would just go completely out the window. So it's smart for them just to kind of, you know, just keep him out, healthy scratches in the game. It's a weird dynamic that he's kind of just, you know, floating around on the active roster. But yeah, Tyrod Taylor was in there. He has a hamstring injury. I believe he's on the IR, which means he's out for at least 3 weeks. So now you have Davis Mills coming in against the Carolina Panthers team, which can force some errors. And that's what you saw on Sunday when Jameis Winston and the Saints visited Carolina. And yeah, it was problematic that they were able to force some errors. And I think that's kind of Winston's own doing as well, but it's not going to be super easy for Mills. And, you know, the Panthers could be in good shape to improve to 3-0. And yeah, having that Sam Darnold, that trade worked out pretty well for him so far. And I mean, they haven't played the greatest opponents, of course. You know, they played the Jets week one, and then the Saints, which still, given what the Saints did against the Packers in week one, still pretty impressive. And I know the Saints were missing a bunch of their coaches due to COVID and stuff like that, but still a really good result to put up, because that was a game that could have been considered a toss-up, especially if I guess the coaching staff was full strength. And so yeah, so they did the job they had to do, and now it looks like they could be 3-0 for sure. Because yeah, like Texans have been actually really good with Tyrod Taylor on offense. They've kind of been, you know, surprising to get the win like they did against Jacksonville in week one. And then followed up with a fairly competitive game against the Browns, until, you know, Tyrod Taylor goes out. But yeah, just based off of last game, Mills went 8 for 18, 102 yards, a touchdown, an interception. So, you know, we'll see if he's forced into a bunch of passing situations because Carolina establishes a lead, then that's where I think the mistakes could come in, and things could be very problematic for the Houston Texans, and yeah, lead to an easy win for the Panthers. So there's that. There's kind of the mini preview there. I think, yeah, Houston, especially Davis Mills at quarterback, needs to watch out and not make the costly errors. Give the Panthers good opportunities that the defense may provide them for Darnold to have easy scores. That's something that Houston wants to avoid. And then the final quarterback kind of situation I want to get to for today is the Steelers, because Ben Roethlisberger is dealing with a pectoral injury. Apparently, he is going to do everything he can to try to play in this game. You have Deontay Johnson, who had a super unfortunate injury towards the end of, or at the literally the last play of the game versus the Vegas Raiders in Pittsburgh, to where it's garbage time at that point. There's no way the Steelers are going to win the game. They were down, 26-17, which of course ended up being the final score. And, you know, I think it's a crossing route. Deontay Johnson catches it, tries to get out of bounds to save time. And then the way he gets tackled, you know, he's down on the ground. And I think, I don't know if there was an official diagnosis yet, but you're probably, you know, ACL or actually, okay, I totally got confused. Okay, Deontay Johnson's knee looking better, but not to be confused with great. That was Mike Tomlin's quote. But yeah, I think the initial fears were like, we're going to be, you know, it was going to be devastating news, especially given the situation of like garbage time. He didn't really need to be out there. Had a 100-yard game, and you know, that is what it is. The Steelers are dealing with a bunch of different injuries too. You know, TJ Watt, who they just signed to the massive extension to make him the highest paid linebacker ever, or maybe even the highest paid defensive player ever in NFL history. He's on the injury list. Ben Roethlisberger, like I mentioned, so you would likely be looking at, I think, Dwayne Haskins is the next guy on the depth chart for Steelers. I would kind of be surprised if it's Mason Rudolph at this point, but always safe to check. Okay, so it is Mason Rudolph. So that's kind of what the plan would be. Now, Rudolph is a good supplement. I mean, he's been in there before when Ben Roethlisberger was out with injuries, and, you know, not necessarily the greatest results have come from that, but it at least is a solid attempt to keep the Steelers afloat while Ben Roethlisberger was out. Definitely not playoff worthy if Ben Roethlisberger is not in there, but does enough. And so that's what they could be looking at. They play a Cincinnati Bengals team who I think, let's see, did they beat Chicago last week? I'm forgetting that. No, they lost to Chicago. Okay. So they have had 2 3-point losses. So they've played some close games, had the over, or no, I'm sorry. They won the over. They won week one against the Vikings, 27-24 in overtime. And then they lost to Chicago by 3 in week two. So probably expect this to be a close game, especially with Cincinnati being healthier than Pittsburgh. There's a lot of question marks up in the air in regards to how things are going to go. But, yeah, expect the Bengals offense to be firing, especially if TJ Watt's out and Joe Burrow is able to get that extra time to sling it. That's what you saw with Derek Carr. He was having a field day throwing for almost 400 yards. I believe he had 383, and including that like 61-yard pass to Henry Ruggs, which is why they drafted him as that for that deep threat. So yeah, it's gonna be completely up in the air. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Bengals upset, especially if, you know, I would say the biggest factor is if Ben Roethlisberger is going to be on the field or not. So I expect the close game could come down to the final possession type of deal, and we'll see what happens there. But yeah, going through those five teams, you know, Chicago, Indy, Miami, Houston, and Pittsburgh, already we're seeing a little bit of a quarterback uncertainty and shakeup that could affect some of these team seasons. A big weekend for golf is about to ensue, starting on Friday with the Ryder Cup. And this is one of the greatest kind of country, well, it's technically country versus continent competition in the world. And it's brings in a ton of different people, the non-golf fans, to this catches their attention. And I think the biggest question is, can Team USA, who is considered to be a favorite this year, can they pull off a win versus Team Europe? Or yeah, and Team Europe has been solid since they adopted having it just be all of Europe versus just Great Britain, Northern Ireland, and those countries. It's been much more competitive, and it's been much more dominated by Team Europe. And, you know, I definitely have my doubts. I don't care what or how many U.S. players are in the top 10 of the world ranking or whatever. I still think Europe is the team to beat. Obviously, they still have the trophy, so they're going to be defending that. But if you look at the players that Team Europe has, Jon Rahm, of course, Rory McIlroy, Ian Poulter, who, you know, I think in any other event, you would be like, okay, not a major threat, but when it comes to Ryder Cup, it's a completely different story. Who else? Sergio Garcia could be a threat. Victor Hovland, a young player from Norway. Paul Casey, always one of those annoying English players that could be detrimental to the USA's hopes. And Lee Westwood, another one of those guys. It just seems like they have the good mix of young talent and those cagey veterans. Tyrrell Hatton, Tommy Fleetwood. So there is Shane Lowry. So there is areas to where, or players that could, when it comes to Sunday and when you have the 12 versus 12, all of those singles matchups, to, and that's what I think. This is going to be determined late on the final day of Sunday if I had to give a prediction, just because I think even though USA does have the better skilled players, I think there's always always the threat of Team Europe, no matter what. It's just the way it's going to be. So, but yeah, I mean, USA, very, very deep field with Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, Tony Finau, Brooks Koepka is in there. You got who else? Dustin Johnson, Colin Morikawa, Bryson DeChambeau. So it just goes on and on and on. So if Team USA is able to get through the group play days, you know, fairly well within a margin, you know, that would be unbelievable if they were leading going into Sunday. Then I think anything close going into Sunday advantage Team USA. But if they find themselves just absolutely getting dominated after the first 2 days, of course, it's going to be an uphill battle. You know, players may be trying to do too much to where, not necessarily implode, but just don't play to the skill level that they should be. That's when you could get the problem and Europe could pull away. But yeah, just the depth of Team USA heading into Sunday with the singles play is a reason why I think they have a really good shot to win this year. But of course, the threat of Team Europe is always going to loom large. And there's another event like this, except it's in the sport of tennis, and it's the Laver Cup, which was introduced fairly recently. It doesn't have the rich history of the Ryder Cup, but it's an event that is taken very seriously by a bunch of players around the world, and it is Team Europe versus Team World. So obviously Team Europe, and then you got, I think if you're looking at Team World, you know, you have like Shapovalov and Oger Aliassime from Canada, Opelka, Isner, Jack Sock as the alternate from the United States, and then Diego Schwartzman's in there from Argentina, and then Nick Kyrgios is in there from Australia. So can those players pose up to a daunting Team Europe, no matter, and this is, it's kind of crazy. Like, this is Europe is still as good as they were before, and they don't have Djokovic, Federer, or Nadal playing. So that just tells you the young talent coming from there. And, you know, you have Daniil Medvedev, which I guess they're considering Russia part of Europe there, which makes sense. Two continents, right? So U.S. Open champion Daniil Medvedev, you got Stefanos Tsitsipas, Alexander Zverev, Andre Rublev, Matteo Berrettini, Casper Ruud, and then they got Feliciano Lopez in there as an alternate. So I guess the veteran presence, having the 40-year-old Spaniard in Lopez, because I think every single one of these guys, Medvedev, Tsitsipas, Zverev, Rublev, Berrettini, Ruud are all like under the age of 27, 26. If you had Dominic Thiem in there, he's out for the rest of the year, like Federer and Nadal are. Thiem would have been the oldest guy on that, not counting Lopez, but still. I think there is always potential, and I think it's going to be because of the doubles matches to where Team World can stay in it and potentially have a shot to win. These have actually been surprisingly close over the years to where I believe it was Alexander Zverev and John Isner were playing. Was this last year or no? It didn't happen last year. Obviously, COVID. 2 years ago when it last occurred. Yeah, Alexander Zverev and John Isner were playing basically for the Laver Cup, and it was like the final match or second to last match. So yeah, it's been surprisingly close. Having a guy like Nick Kyrgios is always going to be a good thing. Always going to be a threat. Jack Sock to potentially have as a doubles player. Shapovalov and Ozier Elias seem have improved greatly and are continuing their steady rise up towards or into the top 10 in the world. Opelka is going to be the next John Isner and better. And then, of course, John Isner, veteran presence for that team. So, I think this could be surprisingly close. But, you know, you still have to give Team Europe being the favorites there because they have, I mean, if I go back to that list, got Medvedev, world number like 2. Tsitsipas is what, world number 3 or 4. Zverev in the top 10. Rublev, same deal. Berrettini, Casper Ruud is into the top 10. So all 6 of their guys are in the top 10, which is just ridiculous, of course. And, So they, by far, if you're looking at the world rankings, you should be like, there's no way they would lose that. But like I've said in the past, these have been surprisingly close. So don't rule out Team World. That's kind of what it is. So a little bit of golf, Ryder Cup action, a little bit of tennis in the Laver Cup. Actually, yeah, Laver Cup in Boston, which is pretty cool. Kind of wish I jumped on that and ended up going, but kind of tough when you're in college and doing a sport in season. So, I'll be watching both, and I will be fired up for both. That is for sure.